Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi everybody, and welcome to this week's Squiggly Careers podcast. I am Helen and I'm joined by my co-host Sarah.
Hi everyone.
And it's a particularly warm day today. Some of you may not know that Sarah and I don't always record together. We record at the same time but in different places. So I'm sat in a rather warm study at the moment.
I'm in a really dark, it's really depressing. So this is, we're recording this right in the middle of a heat wave, and I'm in a really dark room with all the shutters closed. But to make me feel summery, this is one of the gin and tonic episodes, so just to warn everybody.
I didn't know that. I've also got an empty glass of wine next to me. I'm glad we're admitting this.
You've got an empty glass of wine. Yeah, quite, you know. Who knows what's going to happen?
We did have a bit of a pre-podcast chat, so yeah. But moving on from wine and hot rooms with windows we can't open because it'd be too noisy for this podcast, this is episode 91 of the Squiggly Careers podcast. Woo! And since our last podcast, we have also announced our celebrations for episode 100. So we are doing a live podcast recording on September the 9th. It's in London. I'm sorry, everybody, the world doesn't revolve around London, but that is where we're doing the podcast recording. We've got some brilliant guests, Pip Jameson, Dan Marie Serta, Simon Biltcliffe, and our tickets sold out within 9 hours. So,
which we weren't quite ready for.
We weren't
there
quite ready
many
for.
Tickets, to be fair, rather.
We weren't quite ready for. So the people that I've got tickets, we're really happy. We can't wait to meet you all, which would be brilliant. Obviously, most people haven't got tickets because it's not the biggest theatre in the world, but we are recording that podcast, so you'll all get to hear about it. And if we're not too scarred by the whole experience, we are already exploring the potential of doing future live podcast recording. So,
And we should try and do one outside of London at some point.
We should definitely.
So if anyone is listening to this and based in another city.
Another city other than London, who knew?
Yeah, we'd be very up for it. We probably just don't know as many people or as many spaces. So if you've got ideas, get in touch with us. We'd be really happy to hear them.
We're getting a few messages about Manchester, Sarah, on Instagram.
Ooh, so we like Manchester.
I know. Home at Manchester is my favourite place there. Anyway, before we get on to the topic for this week, which is all around becoming a manager for the first time and how you kind of make that transition into management, we've got lots of different top tips for you that we're going to share. Before we get into that, we did just want to say a big shout out to a lovely lady who emailed us this week with a really personal, lovely email that made Sarah and I both super, super happy. Her name is Akshata Taggers, and she emailed us about, she's a veterinarian from Australia, and she was working in London and just sort of discovered our podcast. And she was going through a couple of interviews and moving back to Australia and lots of change. And she basically just sent us the most lovely email about how the podcast helped her with interviews and how she's in a job now that's really interesting and stimulating. And she was basically just saying thank you. So we just wanted to say a big thank you back to Akshata, because it really touched us. And we love hearing from people who have put the podcast or any training, if you've been on course with us, into action. It's something that Sarah and I are so passionate about, that people take the insights and the tools that we give them and put them into action. So if we've helped you, please let us know. You can drop us an email just at getintouch@amazingif.com. We really care about it. We read all of them. Your suggestions for podcasts, they go into our spreadsheet, and then we tackle them like one by one as much as we can, or they turn into a career tip on Instagram stories. But yeah, do get in touch with us. We really care, and we love to know that it's helping you. So in the context of Squiggly Careers then, because we always try to relate all the topics back to the Squiggly Career and the fact that work's changing and more fluid, what's your perspective, Sarah, on why this week's topic about managing for the first time is relevant?
Well, I think what's interesting is if you're becoming a leader for the first time now, it's quite different to if you were becoming a leader for the first time, even 5 or 10 years ago. So in quite a short space of time, I think we're seeing quite a few changes in leadership. And I was actually reading today a really interesting article in the July-August edition of Harvard Business Review.
Oh, I have that downstairs.
It's a really good article. Plus, I then discovered that it's all available for free on the website. And I was thinking...
Oh. Only when you're... The article.
Which is called... it's all about nimble leadership. And we'll make sure that the link is in our usual resources. But the summary is that they're talking about the days of command and control leadership. So very kind of hierarchical, tell people what to do and people just go off and be minions and do it, are definitely changing. That's kind of gone. But actually, most organisations haven't quite worked out what they're going to replace that with. And actually, the article is a case study of two organisations who have adapted and evolved really well, because their observation is if you're starting from scratch, it's almost easier, you know, because you can kind of design with the present in mind. But most organisations are not. Most organisations have got legacy systems or different ways of doing things, and they're all trying to work out what does the future look like in terms of their leaders. And they actually talk about that they think there's three skills that are going to be particularly important now for all leaders, which I thought was just worth mentioning kind of briefly before we get into some of our experiences of leading for the first time and our top tips. And those three skills are coaching, connections, and communication. And coaching, helpfully, we do have a podcast episode on, so that's episode 84. And communication we do as well, so communication is episode 54. But connections was the one that I found interesting. And what they're actually talking about is your ability to almost have that wider view, to be able to make, I think they call it even something like creative connections, about which teams should work together and spotting opportunities, I suppose, to bring things together where there might be value that other people can't see because they're working on their specific project. And actually, I was thinking about some of the best leaders I've worked for, or sometimes when I think I'm at my best. And often it is your ability to do that. It's because you're often dipping in and out of like lots of different things, multiple things. You can then see, oh, well, actually, this project could segue into that, or that person could help this person. And so what I think is interesting about leading for the first time now is that there's probably less role models or less relevant things that you can look at from the past to go, oh, okay, so this is how it's always been done, so I can learn from the best.
That's a really good point.
And do my own version. I think it's probably simultaneously more exciting, because I think it's a more interesting challenge. I think it's one with more freedom, where you'll get more fulfillment personally and also help people to succeed and find more fulfillment within your teams, but probably also a bit harder. You know, most people going into leading for the first time will be in those organisations who are shifting, who are making those changes, and they probably haven't figured it out either. So hopefully what we're going to talk about a bit today is, A, our experiences of leading for the first time, and they're interestingly a little bit different. The first mistake that we made, or well, I don't know if it's the first mistake, but just what we know we got wrong in hindsight. We'll try not to dwell on that too much. And then we've done about 10, I think we did get to 10 top tips. And we're going to do them quite quickly. So just top tips, if you're leading for the first time, things to think about, things to bear in mind. So Helen, when you were leading for the first time, was it, do you like distinctly remember that moment? What was happening? And in hindsight, what would you have done differently?
Yeah, I do remember actually. So the first time that I was a manager, I felt like for me, it was like this really pivotal thing, because I'd really wanted to be like a people manager, and I'd managed teams, I'd managed projects, but that had always been like pseudo management. I wanted to help somebody with their career and their work, and I got that opportunity when I went to E.ON, I can't even remember how many years ago that is. It's quite a few years ago now. And I was managing, the first job I went into is this like performance improvement type role, which I, do you know what, I'd taken the role primarily because I wanted to become a manager, and my desire to become a manager was more important than me actually thinking, is process improvement really suitable for me, given that I don't love processes? Probably not. But I did move from it for quite quickly into an innovation role. But I remember the team, it was an all-male team, and I was probably the keenest manager that they probably had ever had and slash still have ever had, because this is like my moment of like,
I can't work out whether we would both be brilliant to work for or really annoying, because we would just be so into this stuff.
I think maybe I've got a little bit more nuanced in my approach, in that I don't try to improve everybody and grow everybody. But I do remember I'd done a lot of research, I've read a lot of books about how to be a good manager, and I'd got all these different tools that I basically wanted to apply to people.
Like having guinea pigs, like in a lab.
And I don't know how it went down. Yeah, they were all really positive. And I did lots of, like, teamwork sessions, and I basically threw everything I had at them. I didn't have a lot, to be fair, but I had a lot of enthusiasm for it. But, yeah, that was my first time, and then I have every role since I've been a manager. I think, yeah, I'm just kind of backtracking on my career. Since that point, I've always managed teams, and the largest team, probably about 35, 40 people, and the smallest team, probably that one, actually, about 3 people. But it hasn't actually been that as I've got more senior, my teams have automatically got bigger. In some of my roles, I've had a relatively senior role. You know, it's all relative, isn't it? But actually, my teams have been quite small. So it's not, I wouldn't say I've said, oh, every time I've got more senior, I've had a bigger team. It hasn't always been like that. The team sizes have changed quite a lot. But yeah, I've been a manager since then. And my biggest mistake, oh, there's been lots and lots of different mistakes that I've made. Probably one very early on, I think, was that I always looked to myself. So if someone was unhappy in their role, or maybe they weren't getting great feedback, I was like, oh, what can I do differently? How can I make this situation better? And it wasn't until I got a coach when they basically said, Helen, it's not always all about you. Like, there's something else going on with that person. You can only adapt and change yourself so many ways before you have to kind of just stop and kind of accept it how it is. So I think quite a lot of the time I tried to change myself a lot to help other people. And then I think another mistake that I've probably made as a manager, and it's taken me quite a while to get past it, is for a long time, I think I was too nice because I cared so much about people and helping them to be their best. I think I was a bit too nice, particularly when giving them feedback. And I might waffle around the feedback, or I might soften it so much that my messages weren't clear. And a couple of years ago, I heard this statement that stuck with me about clear is kind, unclear is unkind. And actually,
ooh, that's good.
And it really resonated. And that sometimes saying less, but being clear and being direct, you know, you don't have to be rude, but being really direct, and then just letting the other person talk, and not just because you feel awkward about it, filling it with stuff that actually is a bit unclear.
Mm. And so it's a bit like that. What's that radical candor saying? Is it care personally, challenge constructively?
Challenge directly.
Challenge directly.
In that axis,
That's why I think it takes a bit of practice, doesn't it? Because you don't want to lose the fact that you still care, but you realise that you have still got to be clear, and that some of those messages people are not going to enjoy hearing. But that doesn't mean you don't care. It's a hard balance.
It is. And the box in that model, that radical kind of model that I was falling into for like a long time, is this ruinously empathetic box, which is like, has this quadrants on the model. And it's where you care personally, but you don't challenge directly. And that for me was the equivalent of my unclear is unkind that I was doing. And I thought I was being kind and helpful and nice, but actually it wasn't until I just got more direct and more specific that I realised it was much more helpful to people. What about you? Did you have the same moment of being a manager?
No, do you know what? I didn't. Like you, I definitely had the perception that people working for you mattered.
Yeah.
And actually, I was talking to somebody yesterday about how you sort of define leadership. And one of the kind of models that I was testing out was the idea that leadership will become, if it's not already, actually how many people you influence and impact inside and outside your organisation.
Lovely definition.
Thanks. That's my new working definition that I'm like starting to try out on people. And
I like it.
Very intentionally in there is not, it's how many people who work for you. And actually, I've done some jobs where you've had less people working for you, but your ability to influence kind of across an organisation has been really critical to your success. And often they're harder. Almost when people report into you, sometimes that I think can be easier. But yeah, I didn't have that pivotal moment. For me, it actually happened more organically. I think I was in Barclays and had some roles where people did start to work for me, but I'd also progressed quite organically. So it never felt like, oh, I've suddenly got this thing. I think it was on my mind, but probably then I moved to Sainsbury's, started to have, again, smaller teams and, you know, some bigger teams, a bit like you. I sort of did have one role where I had sort of more like 30, 35 people. And I remember being quite conscious of that, of suddenly thinking, oh, actually, I can't spend time with everybody here in the same way that I could have done in some of those previous roles. So that did change over time, but I didn't have that kind of very clear moment where I suddenly went, oh, I'm a leader now. I think it was more kind of natural. And when I was thinking about, particularly, I think when I was in more senior roles, which would have been some sort of management or leadership roles, I think I was still quite respectful and too respectful of the command and control model. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to even remember an example of disagreeing with someone that I worked for in like the first 3 or 4 years of doing leadership roles, or what I would classify as leadership roles. I couldn't think of one. Yeah. I don't think I did. And so there would have definitely been times where people in my team or collectively, we would have disagreed with what the person I reported to thought. And I didn't have the confidence or the bravery to disagree. And that's all to do with me having a confidence gremlin around conflict and thinking I couldn't possibly disagree. And probably a bit too much respect for thinking, oh, well, that person's more senior. And I think my equation was that person's more senior, so they're more right. And some of those people also, I would say, probably didn't even think like that. But I think I was thinking like that. So it was probably limiting me. And so I did spend a bit of my career probably being a bit of a what I would call like a yes man slash woman, because the phrase is like a yes man. Yep. But like I was definitely a yes woman. I could always be relied on. I was probably doing a good job. I was doing a good job with my team. I definitely cared. There was a point where actually I had worked for somebody different. So I was in a new job. I was working for someone different. And almost because she was so challenging, it actually gave me no choice. And it was sort of the best thing that ever happened to me. I had to do it to like survive. I had to have an opinion. I had to have a perspective. I was in a team with lots of strong opinions and perspectives. So it was a bit like that, you know, that you sort of got to dive into the deep end, survive or thrive. And I remember finding it really hard. But I also, when I reflect now, I think that job and every job I've done since, I've been way better at them in terms of from a kind of leadership perspective. So yeah, I think I sort of took the command and control thing a bit to heart.
But I was just reflecting when you were talking then, because I was thinking, you know, we talked about managing the first time, but I almost feel like every time I have managed, it has felt a bit like there's been something. It's the first time about it. It's the first time I've had people older than me working for me. It's the first time I've done it in that organisation. It's the first time I've done it and I've never known that industry. There's always felt a bit like, oh, it's the first time it's a team of that size. And I also think, you know what, you worry so much about, I really want to be a good manager, because hopefully you care about being a manager. But just because somebody's been a manager for quite a long time doesn't mean they're a good manager. So it doesn't, just because it's not their first time doesn't mean they're brilliant. And I think don't make assumptions would be kind of, I mean, we've got to get onto tips, but just a bit of advice on reflection as we're talking.
You're adding in an extra
tip. I know.
Tip.
Yeah, tip 11. We have got 10 to go, everybody. But my secret little tip zero, if we start there, is don't make assumptions in your mind that just because it's your first time, you're not going to be great at this and you've got to learn loads, because actually some people have been managing for a very long time and they treat it more like a role and less like a real responsibility that they care about, and that doesn't make them a great manager. So everybody can be a great manager, no matter whether it's your first time or your 10th time, if you really care about it. And if you apply the 10 tips that we are going to go through right now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Okay, so tip number one, why should anyone be led by you? Genuine question.
I thought you were asking me.
No, not, it's kind of, is it rhetorical? I'm sort of going, ask yourself that. So that is stolen very directly from Rob Joffe at London Business School, who wrote a book with that title. But I do think it's really important when you're becoming a leader for the first time and every other time to be clear about what do you want people to say about you as a leader? In your role as a leader, as a manager, and we're using the terms interchangeably today, but you know, you'll be thinking, I now feel like I'm in that kind of a role. What do you want people in your organisation, outside of your organisation, when people go home at night and chat to their friends and their partners about you? Mm-hmm. What do you want them to be saying? Because I can guarantee there will be. If you think what you do now, you will be going home and chatting about who you work for, because they have such a big impact on your role. I think we've seen a study before, we probably mentioned it before, where 70% of people's engagement at work is impacted by the person they work for. And I sort of go, if that doesn't make you take leadership seriously, I sort of don't know what will. Yeah. Because you just think, crikey, I have... It's a real accountability and responsibility when you get into those roles. So just ask yourself that question. And it's not to doubt yourself or to kind of go, oh, why should anyone be led by me? I don't know, really. Because there'll be some really good reasons. Think about your strengths. Think about what you're really good at. Every leader brings something different. But just sort of know what you're trying to build a reputation for. I mean, I was thinking about this and the different leaders I've worked for. They're all really good at really different things. It's not like I go, oh, every time they're the same. And actually, that's what Rob says in his research. He's been all around the world. And there's not a blueprint. There is no... Oh, well, if you do these 10 things, well, apart from obviously our 10 today, but if you do these 10 things, this is what you need to do. And I remember being quite disappointed by that because I think, well, you know, crikey, if you give me a list, I'll work my way through that list. But it's not. It's because everyone has to sort of bring themselves. And his phrase, which I think is so powerful, is the best leaders need to be yourself more with skill. So it's being authentic, but it's being the best version of you. And it's being kind of skillful around it. And we'll link to some articles and books around his stuff, but that's where I would start. Think about that and think about your answer to that question. So that's one. Number two, and we've just referred to this briefly, but there's no such thing as perfect. Be really careful, particularly as a first-time leader or a first-time manager, that you're not setting yourself up to achieve some sort of perfection. It's an impossible task, one that you'll never win. Actually, the thing that I would advise if you're leading for the first time and you're going into that first role, and somebody told me to do this previously and I found it really useful, is every day for the first like month when you're going into that new job, write down one success you've had that day. And it will just remind you of all the progress that you're making. Because often I think the first month, the first 3 months can feel quite overwhelming. You're trying to do a brilliant job. You're trying to take in lots of information. People are trying to get to know you. But just remind yourself that you are always making progress and moving forward. But it's not in pursuit of perfection. It's just in pursuit of being that bit better the next day. Number three, a bit of a classic tip, I think, but start with the why. So this is Simon Sinek's TED video. And actually, I watched this again this week because we were using it for a training session. And the TED video now often gets called Start With The Why. But really, it's about how leaders inspire action. That's actually the subtitle on the TED Talk. And because it's it was almost one of the original TED Talks, it's really lo-fi. So it's not as slick. It's not as like well filmed.
It's one of the few with a flip chart as well.
Yeah, he's got a flip chart. And I was like, oh, it's like, it's really sweet. It's kind of quite old school. But it is so powerful, and I don't think it's lost any of its resonance. And I think starting with the why, the thing he's encouraging you to do as a leader is make sure that you and your team have got a really good collective view of why do you exist? Like, what are you there to do? What is your role within the organisation? I think I've seen this done really well only once, actually, in the whole of my career, where someone I was working for a whole division made it really clear what the kind of role of that division was, why we existed, what we were there to do. And everyone knew it. And then everyone kind of understood that they had their part to play in kind of doing that thing. And then it's really motivating because it's kind of about the whole being bigger than the sum of the parts. And often I think you think you might know, but you sometimes forget to make sure that everyone agrees or that everyone has that same vision. And there's another good book that's called Will It Make the Boat Go Faster? And that's all about a rowing team where they'd got a really clear objective, which I can't remember whether it was to win Olympic gold or just to win an Olympic medal. I think it might have just been to, they wanted to get into kind of the medals and they were aiming for the Olympics. And everything that they did as a crew, because rowing is all about teamwork, was all about asking that question every time. Is it going to make the boat go faster? If it wasn't, we're not going to do it. If it will, we should all do it. We'll all commit to it. And so that's just a good out of business world example, but written actually in a very kind of business friendly way, very much kind of applicable to teams, creating clear visions for teams. And I think it's just good to make sure that everyone knows that, because you'd be surprised how often people don't. And like I say, I've only actually ever seen it done once really well. And number four, which connects nicely, I think, to number three, is involvement. Just because you're the leader, you don't need to do all of this yourself. I think actually probably the worst thing that you can do, and I reckon I've done this before, is to go off and to work out that why by yourself and then just impose it on the team, because you've not involved people, you've not asked people, you've not engaged them. And actually your team will have an awful lot to contribute, different experiences, different knowledge. And the more you involve people, the more I think people feel like they are kind of part of something that you're trying to do together. And it does take a bit of confidence, because sometimes you do think, oh, but I'm sort of meant to be in charge here. And so surely I'm meant to know these answers. So you have to almost have the confidence to kind of go, oh, I don't have all the answers. And I want to involve us all in trying to get to why we exist as a team, or what we think our priorities are, or what do we think our objectives should be. And actually, I would say I work for two founders at the moment. And one of them in particular is really good at saying, oh, I've not done this before either, but I think this is really important for us to think about. What does everyone think? And actually, it's really that sort of level of vulnerability. I think it doesn't make me think, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. If anything, I just welcome the opportunity that he is asking me for my opinion. But also, I feel like he's being honest. It's not like he says it all the time either. It's not like every day, you know, he's going, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. But when it's something big or something that matters to all of us or something that's tricky, you know, he'll go, oh, you know, I don't necessarily have the right answer, or I'm not sure of this. This is kind of new territory for me. Let's figure this out together. And I find that really motivating.
I also think it's useful when you're a manager, particularly if it's a new situation for whatever reason. So it could be your first time or there's something new about it, that sometimes it can be helpful to have like a bank of questions that you can rely on. So for the involvement, you might say, okay, in a team meeting, I'm always going to ask, what's everybody's perspective on this? And I'm always going to create 10 minutes for discussion. Or it might be, I'm not sure this is the right thing. What do you think? Or whatever it is, but almost have like your go-to questions. I've always found that so helpful. And I normally ask things like, what's the main objective here? Or what are we actually trying to achieve? I always ask that when I'm in new roles, because most people have lost sight of that a little bit. So it helps me and helps them.
And maybe you would take the actually away from that.
So it doesn't sound quite, what are we actually trying to do?
Oh, that already sounds a bit passive. You said that and you were like leading my team, I'd be like, oh god, she's already thinking why do we need to do this.
However I quite frame it, but there's some kind of question around what's the thing that we're trying to achieve, if you want to take my actuallys out of it. And then it might be that I'd say, you know, what's everybody's perspective on this? And you just two or three questions can really help you, so that in the moment, you don't have to think, oh, what's the right question here? What should I say? I think I should be involving people, but I'm not quite sure. Like, if you know you've got like your go-to question, you can rely on that a little bit until it becomes, you know, an unconscious competence for you.
Yeah. And I think it's a tricky one to navigate, because there are times where I think people will look to you for, well, what do you think? And so you've almost got to call it based on the environment that you're in, the culture that you're in. And so you're just getting this balance right between giving people enough, I think, to go on. And sometimes I find that even if you're just giving something to teams to critique, like that actually works quite well. If you go, well, here's a starter for 10, the whole starter for 10 thing.
Agree.
I think that's what I do quite a lot. I think that's probably my tactic. It's like, here's a starter for 10. We could end up with something way better than this or really different. But do you know what? Here's my best shot for now.
Yeah.
And actually, that's also quite a useful tactic. And then number five is know that your job has changed. And this is almost going back to the point that Helen was making around that as being part of being a leader or manager, I often feel that people underestimate or undervalue almost some of what that involves, and very focused on almost like the job deliverables. And you perhaps have heard the phrase before, but it's kind of what's got you here won't get you there. And just remembering, as you move into more leadership positions, it's not about just working, doing the same stuff you're doing before and doing like more of it and working harder or longer. I actually think it's about changing how you spend your time. And I think it's a really big problem, actually, for a lot of people leading for the first time, is you're often in that really tricky situation where you're not a million miles away from being the person doing a lot of the doing, but you've just moved up into these roles where you're probably expected to still do some of the doing and you're expected to do some of the leading and managing. Yeah. And inevitably, the doing takes over. And I think then that comes down to things like your ability to prioritise. So going, right, what is most important for me to be spending my time on? In what order? How am I going to create space for doing things like one-to-ones with my team, for us to spend time together as a team? And you almost have to choose to go, I think those things are important. Because, you know, I do hear people going like, oh, I'm too busy, I just don't have the time to do those things. But if you go, I think they're really important, even if it's 15-minute huddles, stand-up huddles, that still signals to your team that you think it's important to bring everyone together.
Okay, so number six is a topic that we've also covered on the podcast because we think it is really, really important that it should have its own episode, and that is micromanagement. When you become a manager, or even if you're listening and you're already a manager, please, please do not micromanage. Nobody likes it, but if you look at all the data, lots of people do it. So there's something slightly odd going on that no one likes it, but then they become managers and lots of people do it. It often comes from a place of a bit of insecurity, a lack of confidence, because there's some assumptions that people operate with about there's quite a lot of pressure on, and therefore if I take control of the situation and I do all the work and I direct people about what they should be doing, I'm more in control of it and then I can guarantee a positive outcome. But actually, you really limit people's ability to do something better than you might do. You can almost operate with the assumption that no one has better ideas and no one can do a better job. It demotivates your team, so they won't necessarily support or engage with you. And it's just very destructive for things. So please, please, please don't micromanage. If you think, oh, I'm really worried about this, or if you recognize it in yourself at all, listen to episode 71 of the podcast. We talk about it in depth and we know it's helped some people. And we're quite honest about times as well when we might have fallen into micromanagement traps as well. Number seven is to ask for feedback. You can have such a positive impact on your career, but also the people who work for you's career, if you start a really positive feedback culture. And by that, I don't mean you just give each other good feedback. What I mean is be the manager who asks for feedback from your team. And we always use, if you're a regular listener, you'll know, we always use the what works well, even better if framework. So, you know, it could be in a meeting that you ask people for, what are a couple of things that you thought worked well today? What do you think would be even better if for next time? It could be over an email. You might say, you know, I've been a manager now for 3 months for this team. I'd love to get your feedback. One thing from each of you that's working well for you and one thing you think I could do even better over the next 3 months. However you want to do.
This is how I would work out if you're micromanaging or not. I would connect this to the previous one because I think the way to know whether you're doing this, it's always really hard sometimes to see for yourself because you're kind of in the midst of it. But if your team start to give you even better if feedback that sounds a bit like, you know, I'd like a bit more space to lead projects.
You delegated to me.
Yeah, or I would really appreciate more opportunity to lead this thing, or just try and figure out from that feedback. Or you can just ask it directly if you feel like you know people well enough, and just say, I'm really mindful of, I think the risk of micromanagement personally is at its highest when you're probably in your first management role, because you're so keen to do a great job, what do you end up doing? Being all over people all of the time. And it obviously ends up achieving the exact opposite of what you're desperately trying to not do, which is you then end up with people who are demotivated, who are like, oh, it'll feel like it's really hard work to work for those people. But obviously you don't want to give people so much space you don't know what's going on either. So it's a really hard balance. But I do think the way that you can not get around it, but the way that you can just work out how well are you doing at any moment in time is just ask for feedback either specifically or in that kind of WWWEBI format.
So tip number eight is to celebrate the successes of your team, and actually not just your team, other teams, your own successes, as well as creating this culture of feedback in your team. Also create a culture where you're celebrating successes, and that doesn't have to be at your annual offsite, you give out some awards. We're talking like regularly in team meetings, or on a weekly basis, or in maybe you sending an email summary every week. Find regular ways to recognise people's successes. And actually came across something that really resonated with me this week on this point by Abby Wambach, who's got a book called Wolfpack. And she talks about a way that we should celebrate successes is that we should rush and point. And that breaks down as you should, when somebody else has achieved something, you should rush to recognise them, to congratulate them in whatever way feels appropriate. It could be in the coffee queue, it could be in a team meeting, but whatever way feels appropriate, go rush to support that person. And then the point one is when you have achieved something, make sure you point to everybody that has helped you to do it. And again, that could be verbal. I don't think it's literally like you with a pointy finger. I think it's more like point out to the people, not just point at them, perhaps. But I quite like that. You know, if you think on a weekly basis, yeah, who have you rushed and who have you pointed?
I think it's such a nice way to think about success. And I've already used it once this week. So since you discovered that, I'd not heard it before this week. And I've already used it as an example in a training session where everyone was like, oh, that's amazing. I can see how that's so useful. And I've already done it a few times because it almost reminds you to say thank you and to celebrate other people. And you can just see those little moments of people, how much they appreciate it. So it's a really easy way, I think, to have a high impact.
It is. And we kind of, when we did this, we rushed someone called Crystal this week and she replied back. It was, we did it on Instagram, and she was like, it's really nice to be rushed. I quite like that idea that like people are rushing towards to like just give each other a pat on the back. I think what a nice team culture you can create. You know, you don't need to know every single management model and have been a manager for 10 years. If you are creating a culture where there's great feedback going on, really effective, meaningful feedback that can help people develop and improve, and you're celebrating success, you are going a long way towards a team that people want to be in. So you don't need bags of experience for that. You just need to care. And I think that comes on to tip number 9, actually, which is about doing it your way. Yes, there are bags of books that you can read about management techniques, and we've read a lot of them because, you know, we're obviously really passionate about this. But you've kind of got to find your way. You've got to find what kind of manager you want to be. And sometimes you can do that by reflecting on the managers that have been meaningful to you. And what was it that was in their style that you liked and want to emulate? Sometimes you can do it by reading. You know, you might read the Harvard Business Review like we do and go, oh, I really like that particular thing. Or you might watch a TED Talk and be like, oh, Brené Brown's stuff on courage, I really believe in that. I think you've got to get a bit curious, maybe a bit reflective, thinking about those other managers, and just find a way for you to get to your kind of authentic version of management that isn't something you're trying to lift from a book. And that's probably what I tried to do way too much in the very early days. You know, back at Eon, I was definitely reading books and going, I'm gonna do this. You do have to find your way a little bit, and that might take a bit of experience and a bit of practice. But back to that previous point, I think genuinely caring about the people that work for you and their careers and how you can help them, being consistent as well, like in your approach. So I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to have one-to-ones with you all on a fortnightly basis for half an hour. And no matter what happens, I'm going to stick to that. Like, just find your elements of consistency. That counts for a lot. And I think I'm making that time for people and being a really good listener. If you've got that stuff going on, then I think people are really accepting of the fact that you're work in progress and learning, because a lot of people just want that from the manager. Someone who cares, someone who listens, someone who makes time, someone who's consistent. And then everything else is a bonus, and everyone else might do those bonus bits differently. And that's all fine. That's just part of us all kind of being authentic at work.
One of the things you could do if you are leading for the first time is maybe write your own book, write your own leadership lessons. You'd have to write a whole book. But maybe just make sure that you're writing down. So what are you learning as you go? And what would your leadership lessons be 3 months in, 6 months in? Because I think you'll find that you do start to figure out some of this stuff for yourself. And I always feel like people fall into one of two camps. Anti-books, so they read no books because they're like, right, it's all about experience, and almost they're dismissive of anything that's based on like the academic research or anything like that. Or they're very, very into it, almost too much into the kind of the theory, which obviously we both are. And so probably people listening to this podcast, I would hazard a guess, are more likely to be in the, I'm going to read everything I can get my hands on, really like almost like overlearn. So I think it's probably just making sure that you get that balance between making sure you learn from your experiences, not just from books.
And maybe you're a way away from becoming a manager. Maybe it's something that you want to do, but you can't see it in the next 1, 2, 3 years. I think you can still capture those leadership lessons now, because you can still be thinking, that was an amazing one-to-one, or I loved how they, you know, introduced themselves to the team. You can still collect them now. So you've got your book work in progress for when you're ready to read it all back to yourself. And our last tip, tip number 10 or 11, depending on if you think my first one was a bit of a cheat that I managed to get in there, is about a peer support network. So it is so valuable as a manager to have another person or a group of other managers that you can talk to and learn from. And ideally, they, you know, maybe a similar role, similar level. So you can have lots of different mentors, but it's really useful to have that peer that's sort of coming from the same place. I think repeatedly, Sarah and I have done this for each other in our career. And Sarah will say to me, oh, I did this exercise when I started in this new company, or this is how I've been asking for feedback. And I'll be like, that's amazing. I'm totally going to do that. And likewise, I might say, oh, I've done this exercise in a team meeting, and we sort of borrow from each other and learn from each other. And maybe one of us has got different perspectives on the other's challenge. So if you can find some kind of peer support, it will be really, really helpful for you when you're trying to be there for your team. It can be quite helpful to have someone who can be there for you as well.
So the 10 top tips, just in summary for you. 1, why should anyone be led by you? 2, there's no such thing as perfect. 3, start with the why. 4, involve people, don't tell people. 5, know that what got you here won't get you there. 6, please, please don't micromanage. 7, ask for feedback. 8, celebrate success. 9, do it your way. 10, find some peers that you can make friends with. So hopefully that was really useful. As ever, all the resources will be there. This podcast was a request from somebody who we know is starting a new job quite soon. So good luck to them. And we hope it's been really helpful. And if you do have time and you listen to the podcast and you think, oh yeah, I keep meaning to rate it, but I've not had a chance yet, those ratings really matter to us, because it helps us with all our algorithms and Apple to share it, and it's really useful. And actually, even those reviews, which tend to be a bit shorter, are still really powerful and really helpful for us. So if that's something you've got a little bit of time to do, we'd really appreciate it. And thank you to everybody who's already done it. And please do follow us on Instagram.
Can I just do a bit of a shout out to Jenpod, who is our most recent one, whose closing sentence is, I would love to work for these two ladies. They're such enlightened managers. How can you not want to go along for the ride? I was like, oh, Jen, come work for us. Come now.
Oh, I did see that actually, and I thought, oh, that's quite, given we're talking about leadership, that's good.
Yeah,
that's, it makes it sound like we should, at least in theory, we should know what we're doing. We should probably get some people who've worked for us to like tell us, is how do we stack up versus those 10 things?
They can do that publicly on Instagram if you'd like.
Yeah, exactly.
Shame us or claim us, I don't know.
If you are trying to find us on Instagram, we're just that amazing if. And Helen, as you mentioned, does her daily career tips. So it's worth following us just for those, because that's where I steal all my ideas from. And next week, we're going to be talking about negotiation, which we both could have sworn that we would have talked about before, because it's such a big topic within work and careers, and most of us have to negotiate in some way, shape or form. We have done negotiating a pay rise before, which was very kind of specifically just on that topic, but we're going to do broader negotiation, because I think that comes up for all of us and very linked to kind of influencing and persuading. So we thought it was worth doing a deep dive into that. So we'll be back next week negotiating with each other potentially, but in the meantime, have a really good week. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
Bye everyone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.